In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, the actual elections are still a long way off, almost half a year off, but things are heating up. Lots of news, even a possibility, and it's merely a possibility at this point, of a third party, an independent or a third party run on the part of someone. Well, they're talking about him, David French. Is this the person that Bill Kristol of the Weekly Standard said might be a solid candidate with a solid team and a real chance? We're going to be talking about that, among other events, as we lead up to the November elections on this Wednesday afternoon, June the 1st. Joining us, Mark Hemingway. He's a regular guest and senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome back to you.
Great to be here with you.
Molly, I read the tweet from Bill Kristol of the Weekly Standard over the long holiday weekend. He said, just a heads up, over this holiday weekend, there will be an independent candidate, an impressive one with a strong team and a real chance. That turned out to be one David French. Who is he, and why might he be running for president?
Well, actually, first off, I'm not sure if that did turn out to be David French. I think that Bill Kristol tweeted this in a part to rattle Donald Trump. He's been hostile to Trump for not being a good conservative candidate for a while, and Trump totally took the bait. He responded with like a tirade of anti-Bill Kristol tweets, and he referred, one of them that I really thought was funny was about how the Republican Party needed to get itself in order because they have a lot to lose by allowing a third party run or whatnot. But he kept referring to the Republican Party in the third person. And considering that Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party, he should really start trying to speak in the first person plural, you know, refer to the party as his and something that he's part of. But there was no announcement of any candidacy, and not even there still hasn't been an announcement of any candidacy. But what happened is on Friday, Bill Kristol said that he thought that there are many Americans who would be better candidates than either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. And one name he suggested was David French, who is a constitutional lawyer, writer, very good conservative, who really understands what he believes, and is just an all-around good guy. So he mentioned it on Friday. Nobody really talked about it. But then yesterday, or on Tuesday of this week, some reporters said that, in fact, it is David French that Bill Kristol is trying to get to run for president. Now, nobody has confirmed this. Bill Kristol hasn't confirmed this. David French certainly hasn't confirmed this. There's been no candidacy. But just the mention that it might be David French got people kind of going wild. So, I mean, partly because he's not very well known, partly because I think they were hoping that it might be some more prominent candidate like Ben Sasse or Tom Coburn. And so it was just kind of interesting to see the reaction, even though no candidacy has been announced.
Real quickly, Molly, you said people kind of went wild. You wrote about it recently. What were some of the reactions you saw to at least the rumor that it would be David French?
There were many bad reactions, but the one that really springs to mind is this Politico reporter. He's a political journalist, Kevin Robillard, I think is his name. He, within moments, had found this supposedly scandalous passage where David French and his wife had, it turned out when David French was deployed, because he voluntarily served in Iraq after 9/11, while he was deployed, they came up with rules about how to handle themselves to avoid temptation, which included things like staying off of social media and things like this. And the political journalists just went wild. They thought this was just absolutely horrible and Sharia-like. And everybody piled on about how weird it was. And, I mean, to think that in a year when Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are the two top contenders for the seat, and Hillary Clinton's marital problems are legendary, and Donald Trump hasn't been able to stay married to a wife for very long throughout his three marriages and his bragging about his infidelity. The idea that two people working to keep their marriage intact during a stressful deployment is the thing we mock. I mean, this is exactly why, in fact, we get candidates like Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump instead of better candidates, because the media are so ruthless and treat really good behavior, like preserving your marriage at times of stress, as a freak show, and they let other people slide by when they really do have marital lives and sex lives that are worthy of some shame.
Mark, why don't you give us an update on Hillary Clinton's, not her marriage, but the email flap?
Well, in the last, I guess it's been in the last week, I don't remember the exact day it dropped, but the Inspector General of the State Department released a report about her email situation, and the Inspector General's report concluded that Hillary Clinton's unusual email situation with her own private email server at her home was not only not well known, it was not a known thing at the State Department among the powers that be that govern this sort of thing. Had she sought permission for such an arrangement, it would have been denied, you know, according to standard State Department policy. And this is pretty interesting because it's the first real tangible authoritative thing we have saying Hillary Clinton flat out lied about this. You know, she had said before that her email system was well known and it was, quote, fully above board. And this Inspector General report completely countermands that. And further, there was another sort of bombshell that dropped where Cheryl Mills, Hillary Clinton is one of her top aides. She's also a lawyer. She had testified in a deposition to this watchdog group, Judicial Watch, that Hillary Clinton's emails to people that weren't inside the State Department had been withheld from FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act requests. And that, if that's true, that might well be a violation of federal law.
So what I noticed here, Mark, and I want your reaction to it, is at least two kind of mainstream, almost pop sources, Time Magazine, People Magazine, both ran pieces after the release of that report, contrasting Hillary Clinton's past statements about her email activities with what the report has documented. And to me, that says this is not going well for candidate Clinton. What do you think?
No, it is not going well for candidate Clinton. At this point in time, I mean, it is impossible to conclude that she did anything other than, you know, issue a series of bald-faced lies about what she was doing and whether or not it was acceptable and or legal. However, even though the media has been doing this and they've dutifully reported all this, I do find it interesting. I've seen all kinds of headlines to the effect of, you know, here's Hillary Clinton's misstatements, or sometimes they'll get really, you know, daring. They'll say her intentional misstatements or something like that. They cannot bring themselves to really condemn this in particularly harsh terms. The Washington Post had a good editorial along those lines that was pretty, you know, tough on Clinton for her lies. But by and large, the media has really they're still kind of keeping it at arm's length. In fact, I would say that I haven't seen anywhere near the level of coverage to Hillary Clinton's email scandal as I have over, say, the past 3 or 4 days involving the documents that have been leaked about the Trump University that involves a lot of charges of fraud for Trump, which is not to say that's not an issue worth pursuing. It's just that you do see a disproportionate level of attention, and the tone is sharply different. You know, it's very much they are going after Trump as a matter of character in ways they're not going after Hillary Clinton as a matter of character. I mean, they're saying this doesn't add up, but they're not, you know, not laying this right at the feet of Hillary Clinton and her own decision making in a way that would suggest that she has serious personal accountability issues.
Molly, I want to come back to Trump in a minute, but one more question on in that vein, and that is, could Bernie Sanders be staying in the race without a realistic possibility of getting the nomination at this point, just in case Hillary Clinton is indicted?
You know, I've long held that Bernie Sanders is staying in the race because he's accomplishing so many of his own goals by staying in the race. I mean, people keep saying, why is he in? He has no chance. And at the same time, he's building this very passionate movement for socialist ideas, and that's something he spent his life working on. So, of course, he would stay in. But, yes, this is an additional thing, and that he is well-positioned should an indictment come down, which is still very much a possibility. And you even noticed that this week he took a turn where he started saying totally different than what he had said earlier in the campaign, that he was troubled by her handling of the email. I mean, there's a debate early on where he said, enough about the darn emails or something like that, and everybody cheered. And it was a really weird thing for someone to say if they actually wanted to win the Democratic nomination, to take it easy on Clinton and her scandals. But in recent weeks, he's been taking a turn on this. He's been saying that he is troubled by it. That does suggest that he might see this as a path to the nomination should something go very bad for her legally, which is possible.
There's also been a lot of news recently about the Democratic convention, and it doesn't look like the Democrats are going to have a peaceful convention. There was all this talk, you know, about how the Republican field being splintered and how you might end up with a broker convention, and there may well be some unrest at the Republican convention due to protesters about Trump, but the party will be, I think, you know, about as unified as they can around a figure as polarizing as Trump. But I just saw a news story that said that 20,000 people had committed to appear at an Occupy DNC protest for the convention in Philadelphia this summer. And there's all manner of sort of left-wing agitation that are leading up to that. I really think that I would not be surprised if there were a major reckoning at the Democratic convention over this. And the fact that Hillary Clinton just keeps having these scandals get worse and worse is only going to empower these people.
Mark Hemingway is our guest, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, along with Molly Hemingway, senior editor for the Federalist. We're doing our weekly update on the November elections. When we come back, we'll talk about California Governor Jerry Brown endorsing Hillary Clinton.
If you're going to a Lutheran church, you should be hearing the name of Jesus more than the name of Martin Luther.
Pastor Trevor Sutton, author of the book Being Lutheran.
And I think that's really what Martin Luther would want. He made it quite clear that this faith is not to be based on him, but is to be based on Christ alone.
You can purchase Being Lutheran at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Being Lutheran, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Brooklyn, New York. Hope Lutheran, Birmingham, Alabama. Our Savior Lutheran, Paradise, California. St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan. Peace with Christ Lutheran, Fort Collins, Colorado. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Kimberling City, Missouri. The Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Salinas, California. St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin, and St. John's Lutheran, Colton, California. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org and click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about the November elections with our regular guest Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, another piece of news here, this one out of California. The governor there, Jerry Brown, has at long last endorsed Hillary Clinton. He said it's the only way to stop a Trump presidency. How important is that?
You know, I'm not sure. Governor Brown and his father were, you know, very big players in California politics, and I'm sure it really felt good for Hillary to have this endorsement of this kind of, you know, old moderate hippie. But having said that, I don't think that's where the enthusiasm for Bernie is coming from. I think that Bernie is doing very well with younger voters who are just kind of tired of Democratic establishment types. And the hippies have been in control of the Democratic Party for a while now, so it's not as it's, you know, they've become the establishment. They've become the man that they so hated when they were younger. So I don't know how meaningful it is. I mean, the thing, again, that's weird is Bernie really is mathematically eliminated. So he has nothing to lose, and she has everything to lose by not. So Hillary really needs to dominate California. I mean, if she loses, it's going to be really humiliating. And if she just even underperforms expectations, it's humiliating. At this point, or, you know, a little bit prior in when she was running against Barack Obama, her campaign kept making the point, why is he so unable to close the deal? You know, if he's the one that we have to go with, why can't he close the deal? Well, those same questions are now being asked for Hillary. Why can't she close the deal? Why is she becoming less popular as the campaign continues? So we'll see how it goes.
On the issue of Donald Trump, Mark, what must Trump do to win over fiscal conservatives?
Huh, that's a good question. I mean, I think a vice presidential pick will go a long way toward reassuring Republican voters that he is, in fact, committed to certain limited government and fiscal principles that they are concerned about. So he would, you know, have to certainly pick somebody that they trust. He, you know, previously he'd released this list of judicial, you know, possible judicial nominees to reassure people, and there were lots of really great conservative justices on the list. You know, again, it's hard to trust Trump just as a matter of his personal word as not being something that he tends to put a lot of value on. But, you know, if there are repeated gestures like that where, you know, he is doing things that deliberately signal to conservatives, you know, hey, I care about what you care about, then it could have an impact over time in getting more people to coalesce around him and drive that sort of, you know, a little more enthusiasm toward him. But having said that, I mean, looking at the polls even now, some interesting things are happening, which is to say that on one hand, Republican voters seem to be rallying around Trump just like they would any other nominee at this point in time in the process. On the other hand, if you dig deeper into the crosstabs and you start looking at who is rallying to Trump, you're seeing, you know, huge education gap among Republican voters. That is to say, more educated Republican voters tend to be averse to Trump. You know, you're seeing, obviously we've talked a lot about the gap, you know, among religiously observant Americans versus people that aren't so much. And all of these, like, sort of minor demographic trends don't bode well for Trump quite getting to the level of support he needs to win in a general. And again, looking at state polls, even if Trump's a virtual tie in broad national polls, if you look at the polls in key swing states and some other things, the fundamentals still very much favor Hillary Clinton in that regard. You know, I don't know. I mean, at this point in time, it's kind of late in the game to be reassuring people that you stand for certain, you know, values that Republican voters have traditionally understood.
Molly, Mark mentioned this before, a lawsuit that is currently pending against Donald Trump. An op-ed piece in the New York Times this week noted that his public statements about the judge in that case betray the fact that Trump doesn't either appear to know or care how three-branch, independent-branch American government functions. What are your thoughts?
He gives very conflicting messages on that, I would say. Sometimes he really doesn't seem to either have knowledge about the balance of powers that we have as a self-governed republic. So sometimes he doesn't know about it. Sometimes he doesn't care about it. He doesn't seem to care about it. And I think this very much fits in with not just him, but also his supporters, who are kind of a more populist, blue-collar version of Barack Obama, Barack Obama should also understand the balance of powers and how delicate that is. He just doesn't seem to care about it. He doesn't like that it makes life difficult for getting your agenda passed, so he just bullies his way through. And I think people are saying, rather than fight for the Constitution, they're saying, we would like our own Barack Obama. And so Donald Trump, it's absolutely true. He's said a lot of things that suggest that he does not actually understand how the Constitution works. In his defense, he has occasionally spoken about how the executive branch is limited. So I want to be fair there. But it's for his supporters, I think they view that lack of knowledge or love for the Constitution as a feature, not a bug.
It's not just the lack of knowledge about the Constitution and certain principles. It's the lack of knowledge about generally everything. You know, there's a big debate in England going on right now about whether or not Britain should leave the EU. The short term for the shorthand term for this has become known as Brexit, for, you know, Britain's exit. And you know, Michael Wolff, a reporter in New York, you know, was recently talking to Trump about it, and Trump is, you know, again just opining on this, you know, like it's any other thing. And at some point, it just becomes incredibly obvious that Trump has no idea what this issue is, and this is just par for the course, you know, with him. And it's not something that you expect at candidates at this level, and it does not inspire trust. And Trump doesn't seem to care about reassuring on that level.
Well, speaking of reassuring, Molly, what does Trump have to do to win over social conservatives?
It's a challenge for him, and I think actually it's very much related to these other things we're talking about. I think he would have to develop knowledge about the issues that are of concern to social conservatives, about religious freedom, about abortion, about distinctions between the sexes. He'd actually have to understand these issues. It is beyond obvious that he doesn't understand them when he talks about them. And then he would have to develop an interest in them, a passion that would actually convey somehow. And then finally, he'd have to develop courage. He likes to say that he is this guy who's willing to punch back and fight political correctness. But I think we realized that that wasn't true when he caved so quickly on bathrooms and locker rooms and distinctions between the sexes. He didn't have the courage to take on that mob. And if you don't have the courage to say that men and women are different, that this is a meaningful distinction, you actually don't have courage at all. So knowledge, interest, courage.
Mark, on that, in that vein, this kind of punchback, I don't know what you would call it, modus operandi on part of Trump and his supporters, as the media attention, negative attention, increases, and as obviously further facts that the Clinton camp want to come out about him come out, does his punchback, quick punchback quality do him any favors going into the general?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. And the problem with Trump is just that the normal rules seem to no longer apply. Trump is just kind of, you know, they say no man is an island, but Trump really does seem to, you know, exist in his own world. And in the eyes of his hardcore supporters, he can't really do very much in the way, very much that's wrong. So, you know, I think that, yeah, you're right. I mean, Trump's ability to, you know, generate quick news cycle over, you know, some silly thing that he said may diminish over time. But at the same time, I think that on the other side of the equation, you see that the traditional attack ads against Donald Trump haven't worked like on him like they have on other politicians. So I think those two things may just end up canceling each other out.
Molly, this is unrelated to the presidential races, but I did want to ask you about a piece you've recently written about Katie Couric and about allegedly edited footage. You say a stunning betrayal of journalistic ethics. Just give us the lowdown.
I actually think it is related to how we are in this presidential situation. But Katie Couric is a longtime journalist, darling of the media establishment, current global editor of Yahoo News, recently produced and narrated a documentary about guns that purported to be a very balanced take on gun rights and responsibilities. And in fact, it was a very biased documentary. But perhaps the most egregious example of this is that in the documentary, she talks to a group of supporters of the Second Amendment and asks them a supposedly really tough question, which is something like, how would you keep guns away from terrorists or criminals without a background check? So in the documentary, she asks this question, and then there's just stunned silence on the part of this, you know, this dozen or so guns rights activists as they shift uncomfortably in their seats and they look down with shame because they have no answer for this question. Now, if you know anyone who has a gun or has thought about gun rights for about 2 seconds, you would know that that's a weird thing to say, see, because people always have answers to this type of question. And in fact, the group, knowing that they were dealing with a hostile journalist secretly, not secretly, but they taped that conversation and they released the audio. And in fact, it was a complete deception what Couric had done, what Couric and her team had done. The question was asked and they immediately fell all over themselves to give answers and responses. And these responses were very principled and they were practical and they were full of information. And the documentary filmmakers had edited it all out and replaced it with this moment of silence. And then when called on it, they defended the practice. And Katie Couric has finally apologized, but she hasn't done anything to rectify the situation. She has not denounced the documentary. She has not pulled it. She's not resigned from her job. She says she takes responsibility, but there's been no actual responsibility taken.
I would just like to add that there's been a stunning series of documentaries in the last, 5 to 10 years here, where documentarians have been accused of doing things that, you know, would get any normal journalist in a whole heap of trouble in terms of distorting timelines, representing misrepresenting what people say. There was a case a while back about this guy that made this. He was an Oscar-nominated documentarian who made this big film about how I believe it was Chevron ruining a part of the rainforest in South America, and it was all part of this plan for this trial judge to make billions of dollars suing an oil company. And when as a part of the case, the judge subpoenaed the outtakes and found that this documentarian had footage of the American trial lawyer behind this case bribing judges, you know, to get stuff to happen, and yet went on reporting, doing this documentary as if, you know, this guy was on some noble crusade to hold an oil company responsible. I mean, and these issues have not been, you know, major national news stories the way that this Planned Parenthood video has been a major national news story. And the Planned Parenthood video did something totally unprecedented for a documentary, in which they released dozens of hours of raw footage to show exactly the context that they edited those videos down from. They've held themselves to a much higher standard than almost any documentarian has ever done. And
any journalist.
Right, and they're being excoriated for holding themselves to a higher standard.
You can follow both Mark Hemingway and Molly Hemingway on Twitter. Mark's handle is @Heminator, and Molly's is @MZHemingway. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you very much.
Thanks again.
Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll get a review of the movie X-Men Apocalypse from Pastor Ted Giese. We'll talk with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of Baylor University Christian education and collegiate sports. And we'll find Christ in Psalm chapter 30. Joy comes with the morning. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. Especially looking forward to that conversation with Terry Mattingly on Baylor University. Are they being singled out because of their faith-based origins when it comes to collegiate sports and especially the sexual assault charges? Talk about that tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
What would you say if someone asked you to explain the Trinity? Would you begin with Scripture, the creeds, or some clever analogy? And how are Christ and the gospel at the center of this fundamental Christian teaching? Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Beckwith has written a new book in the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic series. It's titled The Holy Trinity. You can save $5 by pre-ordering The Holy Trinity at logia.org, L-O-G-I-A.org.